Hey, what's up? Welcome to the program. A weird day today. A weird day. A gigantic storm, a nor'easter, they call it. Nor'easter. Traveling up the coast, the east coast of the United States. Dumping huge amounts of snow, whiteout conditions, blizzard conditions, scattered power outages. It's nuts. It's crazy. Parts of the United States will be colder than the surface of certain parts of Mars. That's true. That's insane, man. That's insane. That's insane.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Is it cold in here or is it me? It's always me, isn't it?
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the show that you clicked on. What are you kidding me? You don't know what you did? You don't know what you clicked on? Seriously?
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
You know what I found interesting? I thought I'd start the show off on a high note with my voice. You know what I found interesting? Starting last night, all the local television stations all up and down the Eastern Seaboard started flashing the school closings. They're always at the bottom of the screen because there are too many to put on the top of the screen and it would cut off the top of their heads. So they put them on the bottom of the screen. It's usually a scroll. When there's an extreme snowstorm, here's what I find weird and unexplainable or inexplainable depending on how you use this word. Here's the thing. If there's a blizzard and an incredible snowstorm predicted, all the schools are closed. They're all closed. So instead of scrolling like 300 schools on the bottom of the screen, and you just watch this like for an hour waiting for your letter to come up, you know, your school starts with a W and they're on B, you just go somewhere else. Because it's going to be a while before they get to the W's. Because every school in every town in every city is closed. Duh. What school would stay open in the middle of an all-day blizzard? Sadistic school? Seriously. Isn't there somebody at these television stations that say to themselves, you know, rather than spend 5 hours scrolling through all the school closings, having some intern sit there and type in all the names of the schools and all of the state that we live in, why don't you just have a thing on the bottom of the screen that says, all schools closed, except, and then you'll have 3 or 4 Catholic schools. Why not do that? Wouldn't it be simpler? What schools are closed? Well, here's a list of 500 schools. Why don't you tell me what schools are open? Oh, none of them. None of them are open. Well, why can't you just say that? That's a quick, fast scroll. Maybe they want to seem important or something. Why do you have to name every single one? What's up with that? Does anybody have any common sense at these places? Half of them are religious schools, by the way. And when did that start? I mean, when I was growing up, which was like in 14 BC, I think it was. When I was growing up, didn't have many religious schools. They were all public schools, tons of public schools. Here and there in any given town, you'd have maybe two or three religious schools, but that would be it. Now it seems like more than half of the schools in any given state are religious schools. When do we become so religious that we opened up schools? Or are we just too ridiculously upset with public schools? I don't understand. Where is religious? The Mary of the Saint Parish is closed. Leonard's School of Dentistry and Religion closed. And they're making up saint names now, too. Saint Denis, the patron saint of the Patriots. The official religious school of the Patriots. I mean, what's going on here? What's going on? All right. I'm sick of complaining. And I, as I said, my New Year's resolution was not to lose weight. I've given up on that thing. My resolution was to be kinder and gentler. And also not to put up with anybody's crap. So if I seem grumpy yet loving, then I'm achieving my New Year's resolution. It's not well defined, but it is that. I'm not putting up with crap anymore. That's my basic resolution. Doesn't make me meaner. Just gives me more, less of a patsy kind of feel, which makes me feel good. Not to have a patsy feel. I just don't put up with crap anymore. Why would I? Either I'll turn and walk away or not. Okay, let's get started here because it is cold as ice. And by the way, that was referring to the weather, not my personality. Although parallels can be drawn. I have here letters and emails from listeners all across the globe. And when I'm talking about the globe, I'm talking about listeners that read the Boston Globe. No, I'm talking about you. If you've ever contacted me, there have been many questions, and I never answer them on the air because I don't give a crap. But now, with the joy of this, I will now read some of the emails. Here we go. All right, the first email comes from Robert Fishman of Toledo, Ohio. Robert, thank you for listening, first of all. Robert says, Ron, are you actually as grumpy as you seem to be on the radio? Robert, there's a very, very fast answer to that. Yes, of course I am. Although, inside, beats a heart of love. For those that deserve the warmth and the smiles and the day-to-day adulation, I give it up for them. For those that deserve to rot in hell, I simply stand back and watch them drown in their own cess. Hope that answers your question, Robert. Okay, let's go to Baltimore, Maryland. Interesting. This is from Susan Rabinowitz. Hi, Susan. Happy Hanukkah. Susan says, what goes on in your mind before the program? Is there much preparation involved? The only preparation that's involved in this program is H. Some of you got that, some of you didn't. I don't care. Susan, no preparation goes into this show. The more that I prepare, the less the quality of the show is put forth. I find that when I don't know what I'm doing, I get through things a lot easier, because that is the normal course in my life. It's the path least chosen. Thank you, Susan. Okay, let's go to Bangor, Maine. Bangor, Maine. And let's speak to Felicia Robinson, I believe it is. Am I pronouncing that properly? Is it Robinson or Robinson or Rockish Branch or Frockish? Am I pronouncing your last name properly, Felicia? Felicia said, how do you deal with overpriced plumbers? Felicia, that's an odd question for me. Here's how I deal with overpriced plumbers. If they actually fix my plumbing problem, I pay them. I find that when you don't, you get into collection agencies and all these idle threats of harm, and it's just not worth it, so I pay them. But I do ask before they perform the plumbing job how much it's going to cost. I don't just, you know, invite them into my house and say, do what you want, and then charge me as much as you possibly can. I don't do that. To which Felicia responds, hey, wait a minute, this isn't a conversation. What's this? Okay, let's go on to the next one. We're going all the way out to the Midwest, my favorite area of the country, because nothing ever happens there. There are no beaches, there are no oceans, just people and cows and maybe some horses and a lot of wheat. So, from the Midwest, this is Consuelo Delgado from Bolivia, and my geography skills are really poor. And she says, I'm looking for a husband. What quality should I be looking for? Someone who'll marry you, pretty much, is all you're really going to need here. I would, if I were you, I would go for someone who is smart, has a great sense of humor, has those large freaky eyes that painters use, you know, has a good appetite, knows how to cook, is a loving parent. Loves animals, has a great affinity toward meatballs. I think that's very important. People that don't like meatballs. I was speaking to a young lady a few days ago who was a vegan and or a vegetarian. I know the difference between the two. And she said to me, Ron, here's what I do. I don't eat anything with a face. And I said, well, that leaves me out. Okay, let's go to, this is an interesting one. This was actually a letter that was sent to me here. This is from Roberta Rabinowitz. Hey, Rabinowitz, that sounds familiar. I think I spoke to her sister, or I got something from her sister, an email or something. Okay, what is your question? Let's see here. Oh, yeah, this is very interesting. Do you roll your toilet paper under or over? You know, see, that's not a bad question because that says a lot about the person. People that have the toilet paper come from underneath make no sense to me, to be honest with you, because when you make the tear is not a controllable situation when the toilet paper is coming from underneath. The tear takes place underneath or before the dip in the roll. So you're either getting more or less of what you actually want, perforation-wise and sheet number-wise. When you roll your toilet paper over the top, you have more control over the exact tear point where the perforation is. So you have great accuracy in the number of sheets that you're pulling out. Those that have their toilet paper come from the top of the roll have greater control over their lives, have more order in their lives. Those that have the toilet paper roll and the sheets come out from underneath is more of a haphazard individual that basically doesn't care about anything, that lives in scum and total chaos, probably can't even brush their own teeth. And there's the answer for you. Hope that answers your question or questions your answer, one or the other. I don't know which way it goes. All right, let's get an email from a male here. We haven't heard much from males. Oh, Alan Gutzen. Well, that's interesting last name. Gutzen. What is that? Gutzen. Oh, they're not here. They can't answer. Alan Gutzen says, "Have you traveled to other countries?" Yes, I've been in New Jersey, and actually, I was born in New Jersey. So that's, I've been there. Have I been out of the country? Yes, I have. As I said, I went to New Jersey. I've been to France and England and other places that I can't recall because I was too doped up for the airplane flight because I don't like to fly. So I overdose myself and I don't know where I've been until I get home. That's the way I like it. Thanks for your question, Alan. So you call yourself, is that your real name, Alan, or is it your dancer name? Here's a question from Martha Strangeballs. That's an odd name. Martha Strangeballs. That's odd. Who calls himself Martha? That's odd. Martha says, where were you born? Well, I just answered that, Martha, if you were listening. I was born in Manhattan on Riverside Drive, Riverside Hospital. And then my family, shortly after I was born, said, let's get the hell out of here. This guy won't shut up. He's screaming too much. We got to get a single private home because our kid is just screaming. So we moved to Teaneck, New Jersey. And that's where I spent my childhood, Martha, if that's your real name. It was a wonderful life. It has nothing to do with the movie, It's a Wonderful Life. I'm just saying it was. My parents were basically very, very fine. They never bothered me. They never yelled at me. I never yelled at them. I think we had a great relationship, which is why they moved out and left me in the house continually. Maybe I should question how great my childhood was. My parents sent me to a summer camp every year that they could. And I said to them, are you sending me to summer camp because you like to travel during the summer and you won't be home? They said, no, we just want you to get away from us for 2 months. I said, oh, okay. Well, that's a viable explanation. I get it. So they sent me to summer camp where I had my first sexual experience and my last. No, that's a joke. I'm still having them. And actually, that wasn't the first place that I had my first sexual experience. And Martha, you're asking a lot of questions. And they're very personal and very deep. And I greatly admire you for having the balls to ask me. My first sexual experience was with a young lady, thank you very much, in the basement of my parents' home when I was just about a teenager. It was very, very early on, and this woman was what you call a nymphomaniac, which is very, she was older than me, she was 16, and she was like what they call a nymph. She just liked to hump everything. And I thought, well, that could work to my advantage because I was just discovering my body. I had no idea I had a body. I discovered it. One day I was looking down. I said, oh, my God, look at, I have a whole body. Never discovered that before. And I was wanting relations with a woman. And she comes along. She was a friend of a friend. Mm-hmm. And we locked eyes, and I said, oh, she's an attractive woman, a girl, actually. She wasn't a woman yet. And she looked at me and said, oh, there's a living, breathing thing. And I remember we were lying on the basement floor in my parents' house, and she just ravished me. She just she taught me a lot in the space of what I think was about 17 seconds. No, actually, it was a quite lengthy situation. And I'll never forget her. Can't remember her name, but I'll never forget her. And that happened two or three times with her. She was my first experience. And I know I wasn't her first. because she knew way too much. I hope that answers your question, Martha. If it doesn't, it was fun for me to reminisce, because that was pretty cool. I'll do that again any day. Not with her. I mean, that would be disgusting. You know, I think it's time to stop this. We have a guest coming up a little bit later in the show. She's going to talk about women investors, that women are now becoming investors. Let me tell you something. It's 2018, as far as I know. That's what it says on the calendar, at least. And I don't think we should start, you know, this thing about, oh, there's women that do this all of a sudden. Women always do this stuff. Women have always invested. And, I mean, I'm not putting the guess down, because there's reasons for this. But, you know, let's stop making these proclamations like, oh, women are investing now in the stock market. What? What is that a big deal for you? Is that something that is like a front page headline or something? Women have always invested in the stock market. What are you doing? That was a horrible introduction to my guest, who's coming up right after the following commercial words. I'm not very good at pumping up guests, I suppose. I'm good at a lot of things, especially when you get down to the basement. Really, that's where I tend to excel.
The Ron Van Dam Show is intended for mature audiences.
Oh, so that's what ironic means.
Yes, honey. Yes, it does.
The beginning of the show is known as too much information. There you go. Hi, Carrie.
Good morning, Ron.
How are you today?
How are you?
I'm great.
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure being had. Wait a minute, that didn't sound right. Carrie Sweeney is the VP of Women Investors, Fidelity Investments. We're all familiar with that. And we're talking today about some research, I understand, that's been done about how single women address their finances.
That's exactly right.
And what?
Yes, Ron, go on.
No, we have a little delay here, but it's okay. But what did the survey find?
So we found, Ron, that overwhelmingly, you know, some really good news, that overwhelmingly single women embrace being responsible for their financial choices. So they already really like being solely responsible for their money, and they know that they've got to be engaged and really, you know, pay attention to their finances. But unfortunately, we found that many aren't really making it a priority to focus on their finances. And so, you know, they could be missing out on opportunities to really grow and protect their finances for the future. We really want to shine a spotlight on this group and really help them make some better decisions.
I mean, I assume the survey wasn't done on men, this particular one, but I assume that there's probably a similar situation where if you're single, you kind of just don't think about that stuff as much.
Yeah, there certainly is. We saw that while we did focus on women, did see that, you know, somewhat across the genders, that, you know, if you've got a planning partner, if you're married, there's a better chance that someone's there helping you, you know, think about these things. But women do tend to worry more about their finances than say, single men. So it's definitely a little bit of an issue there.
Okay. And I guess everybody should, I don't know about if worry is a proper word. I mean, that's probably what the survey showed, but worry is there should be concern. But there are so fewer avenues with the destruction of the savings account and the CDs, where you basically can't make much of anything on those things anymore. you need to have alternatives, and you do need to look at different methods other than just simple savings.
Yes, without a doubt. And frankly, that's one of the ahas that we saw in our research, that particularly single women have, you know, perhaps too much in cash. There's over a third of them reported keeping, of all their savings, keeping more than 50% in cash.
Yeah.
So, you know, we certainly advocate having an emergency fund. You know, we advise our clients 3 to 6 months is prudent. But beyond that, you could be missing out on opportunities to invest savings and grow for the future. So we really, you know, want to make sure that folks see, you know, they don't want to miss an opportunity to grow and make sure they've got enough for their futures.
I think since 2008, it kind of like threw a caution to the wind, kind of feeling that probably older people after the Depression had the same result, where nothing's for sure anymore. This can happen again. It just happened. So I got to be smart and aggressive, yet extremely careful.
Yeah, there certainly is, you know, a sense of caution.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, we really want to make sure that folks aren't too conservative and too cautious with their money, so that they're not missing out on those opportunities over time.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, and we do see, you know, you would think that the younger generation, and, you know, maybe because of what happened in 2008, 2009, you would think that the younger generation is more conversant or more interested and involved in their money. But we actually see the opposite. There are more folks in the boomer generation and Xer generation that considers themselves women, considers themselves primary decision makers with their money, and fewer than 1 in 4 for the millennials. So the trend is not going in the right way in that regard.
No.
So
well, that's probably right, yeah. But there are products available, and I guess if you don't search out to find out what the products are, then you're not going to know what you're dealing with.
And, you know, Ron, even before you think about products, you know, we found in our research that few single women have even a financial plan, and this isn't something complex. We're not talking about a 100-page document here.
Right.
We're suggesting that people really do four things. They know what they own. So what kind of investments do they have? What do they have for savings? Know what they owe. What kind of debt do they have? What are the interest rates they're paying? Know what their goals are. And this may sound like a no-brainer, but, you know, are we saving for a car versus a house versus education or what have you? Like, put that down in writing. And so importantly, have a financial checkup every year. So many people put this off, but you go to the dentist, you go to the doctor, have a financial checkup at least once a year. Mm-hmm. A lot of women don't get engaged because they don't know where to go, Ron, and we suggest, I mean, of course, we'd love to talk to them at Fidelity, but we suggest starting in the workplace. Many employers offer free financial guidance, and that can help you build that plan and then get to that conversation about what products are right for you.
I've also found that not every product is high risk, and I think a lot of people who haven't entered into that realm think that the investment equals risk, and it does, but there are different levels of it, and that's what they need to know. Some are low risk, some are high risk. There are various levels.
Without a doubt, and you know, let's face it, we the financial services industry does not do a very good job of making it easy. We make it, everything seems so complicated, and that is one of the things that we're trying to shine a light on at Fidelity. It does not have to be that complicated, and if you start with some simple steps and you make decisions that are right for you, you can stay away from all that complexity. We make it seem far more complex than it needs to be.
Well, it doesn't cost anything to pay a visit or to make a phone call or to inquire. It doesn't cost anything to do that. So people should give that a shot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Where do we get more information?
So, Ron, we put together a website, fidelity.com/frontseat, part of our fidelity.com website, to just provide some simple steps that folks can take at every stage of their career,
right.
People that are starting out, folks that are getting ready for retirement, and, you know, just make it real simple to learn a little bit about investing and make sure that you've got that plan in place and are really prepared for your future.
Excellent. Good information. And it's time, you know, this family gathering time, so maybe it's a good time to sit down and have some talk with your family and so everybody's on the same page and everybody can motivate each other and give it a shot. Thank you so much.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Ron.
You take care now. Bye-bye.
You too.
First, they put jalapenos on your hamburger, but that wasn't hot enough. Then came habaneros, but still, that wasn't hot enough. Next came the ghost pepper, and still, that was not hot enough for you. Well, buckle up, tough guy, because Burger Guy thinks you're not man enough to handle the heat of our new sweet flaming mother of heaven. What the f*** did you assholes do to my hamburger burger? Featuring two of Burger Guy's signature paper-thin patties topped with an experimental hot sauce made from a concentrated hot pepper extract that has only been approved for military use by North Korea. This burger will burn a hole through every inch of your intestines and then slap your mama on its way out for good measure. This burger is so hot they wouldn't let us test it on prisoners. Death row prisoners. But for a limited time, you can try your luck at your local Burger Guy, if you're not a complete pussy.
All purchases of the sweet flaming mother of heaven, what the f*** did you assholes do to my hamburger burger, must be pre-approved by a certified attorney at law with proper notification of next of kin. Sweet flaming mother of heaven, what the f*** did you assholes do to my hamburger burger must not be consumed within 500 yards of schools or within 1,000 yards of open flame. All Burger Guy franchisees reserve the right to ignore cries for mercy or requests for immediate medical attention.
Oh, my. Sounds tasty. Hey, we're out of time for today. I'll be back again tomorrow with another new show. Until then, I wish you peace. Thank you for your cards and letters, by the way, and your emails. It really... whatever.